encouraged to come and listen to an oral argument. They've been presented with materials on this case. In some schools, lawyers appear to discuss the case. And after they listen to the case, they will be joined at, by other high school students who are coming for the next oral argument. And at noon, there will be a presentation by today Justice Sykes. And everyone in the courtroom, whether you're a part of the high school program or not, you're all welcome to participate. The discussion will be on the procedures of the court, not about the particular cases we are about to hear. Well, we've met you. I'd like to introduce the court to you, and I'll start with Justice Sykes on my far left. Seated next to her is Justice Patrick Crooks. And to my immediate left is Justice John Wilcox. And to I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. And to my right is Justice William Babich. And to his right, Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. And on the far right, Justice David Prosser. With these introductions made, I'll call the first case, 01-1051 CR, State v. Richard W. Delaney. Representing Mr. Delaney is Joseph Kincada. Counsel?
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Joseph Sincada, and I do represent Mr. Delaney on appeal. I was appointed by the state public defender, and appear for them.
Would you like to raise that podium?
That's it. There we go.
This is a high-tech course.
Sort of like the Sphinx rising.
Mr. Delaney, on his count one of his conviction in this case, is facing an additional 3 years of confinement. He is currently on probation on that, he's on probation. And on that count, he faced additional probation, 6 years. Judge Wilk in Kenosha County made it clear that if he came back, if he screwed up on probation, he could face a potential 3 years. The 3 years is arrived at through the one-year penalty that's applicable under the drunk driving penalty provisions. Those are in Section 346, 65, sub 2C. Mr. Delaney, in this case, had committed an OWI offense operating while intoxicated. It was his third one within a particular period of time. And so the language is that he shall be sentenced under 346.65.2c, a minimum of 30 days in prison, a maximum of 1 year. Judge Wilk applied the 1 year and then applied the statute that's relevant today, the general repeater statute, the general enhancement statute under 939.62, and made clear that while the sentence in count one was withheld, if he came back in front of the judge, he could face up to another 3 years in prison.
What was the sentence on that? This was count one, is that correct?
Yes.
What was the sentence imposed, or what was the... Yes, what was the sentence imposed on count one?
Oh, 6 years of probation on count one.
Was it a withheld sentence?
Yes, withheld sentence of up to three. Well, withheld sentence, 6 years probation.
Withheld what, 3 years?
Withheld nothing, I suppose.
Withheld nothing, right.
Withheld nothing.
Okay, and just 6 years probation.
Yeah, the language I'm referring to is from the transcript, but that did not get into the judgment. It was just a withheld sentence in the judgment. In the transcript, he says... it gives the probation agent an opportunity to keep you in prison for a longer period of time, and also gives us the opportunity to send you back to prison for another, in addition to the three, plus 14 months, and another 3 years. I'm reading that a little bit.
So is a withheld sentence and 6 years probation, how does that relate to the statutory maximum for 346.65.2c, which I understand is a 1 year?
Under 93962, I think that is the maximum under that provision, 1 year imprisonment. And I believe under the probation statute, that would equal 2 years probation. And so then under the enhancement statute that we're dealing with today, it's essentially a tripling enhancer. The 1 year can become 3 years of confinement or imprisonment, and the 2 years gets extended to 6 years probation. That was my understanding from reviewing the record.
My pointed question is this. When sentence was withheld and 6 years probation imposed, is that the imposing the maximum sentence under the law for third offense OWI, the substantive offense?
I believe it is. I think the 2 years of probation would be the maximum probation.
But he didn't get 1 year imprisonment, did he?
No, not on this count.
He did not get 1 year imprisonment on this count. So how can that be the maximum?
I think
that's the point of Justice Bradley's question, is it?
Yes.
I think that the implication is that the maximum of 1 year gives the judge the opportunity to put the 2 years of probation on him. So that's the maximum probation times three under the general enhancer. At least that's my understanding of how he addressed it. It wasn't specifically dealt with in the transcript or the motions below.
Are you aware of why Justice Bradley is asking you these questions?
I believe that you need to have the maximum penalty imposed in order for the general enhancer to apply.
Exactly.
And we've gone along in the case with that, I think, undisputed, although that was my understanding, is the 2 years and then the 6 years. That's the maximum penalty under that provision.
So it is your understanding, the way that, so you say there was no dispute, but the question here is, do you see a problem since you've been asked the question with the idea, was the maximum applied here?
No, I don't. I think it was applied.
He remains exposed to the maximum penalty under the enhancer, the double enhancement.
Perhaps that's a better way to...
Yeah, I think he absolutely is, and I think Judge Wilk will certainly apply the maximum.
That isn't what Harris says, whether you're exposed. You're always exposed to the maximum penalty if you're convicted of a crime. Harris says unless the trial court gave the maximum, there's no sense talking about the enhancement, right?
I think that's what Harris says. It wasn't an area that we focused on too much in this case.
Well, we'll pose the same question to Mr. Becker.
Okay.
Knows that we will oppose and impose that.
The provision that's at issue, assuming, and I think the maximum penalty has been applied here, in effect, Judge Wilk then applied the enhancement provisions under 93962. Sub 1 to enhance Mr. Delaney's sentence under count 1. The language at issue there allows the court to enhance the sentence for any crime for which imprisonment may be imposed. It is our argument that the term any crime does not mean necessarily all the crimes that are within the criminal code. It's limited to the crimes that are, not in the criminal code, but in the statutes. It would be limited to the crimes that are in the criminal code, 939 through 961, generally, but specifically, it does not include the sentence and the offense under section 34663, enhanced under 34665. Under 93962, as I said, the initial section allows a judge to increase a sentence for an offense if that offense is equal to any crime for which imprisonment may be imposed. Later in section 93962, the language of the statutes excludes offenses such as Mr. Delaney's under chapter 346 from being considered as past offenses in order to apply 93962, a defendant must have past convictions or offenses in his, on his record, felonies or misdemeanors. Those are defined as crimes in that provision. Within 93962, however, it explicitly excludes the type of offense that Mr. Delaney committed here, an operating while intoxicated offense, from being used to find him a repeater. Repeater in quotes.
Isn't the exclusion different than that? Isn't the exclusion really from the definition of felony and misdemeanor?
The language is drawn that way now. I believe the way that the statute evolved makes it clear that, well, we argue that those types of offenses are not considered crimes for the entirety of Section 93962. The term felony and misdemeanor is broken out, but then is quickly equated with crimes in the language of subsection 3, I believe. So our argument is that essentially the legislature broke up crimes into felonies and misdemeanors, but meant to define crimes as not not including the drunk driving offense at issue here. So while the language can be read the other way, as the state suggests, and as the state also suggests, can be narrowly applied just to determining whether you are a felon, what felonies and misdemeanors are, we would suggest that sub 3 in that section essentially defines for the entirety of the statute crime. And going back to the first section, the first subsection, subsection 1, we can only enhance Mr. Delaney if he's committed a crime for which imprisonment may be imposed, defined under 93962. Well, what is a crime under 93962? We've argued that because of the limitation in subsection 3 that takes drunk driving offenses out of the definition of felony and misdemeanor explicitly, that really, in effect, takes it out of the definition of crime for the entirety of that section.
Well, let's assume that the Court of Appeals was right and that it really is not taken out of the provisions of that statute. Isn't your further argument along the lines that it's inappropriate under our case law to stack enhancers?
That's correct. Justice Crooks, we believe that the language leads to our conclusion, which is that we should not stack these enhancers. Under the case law, specifically a Court of Appeals case in State versus Ray, I believe the implicit holding there was that when you have a specific penalty enhancer addressed to a specific nature, specific types of crimes, and you then have the overlay of the general enhancer, there is ambiguity arises as to whether both of those should be applied. So we believe that the rule that the Court of Appeals enunciated in Ray warrants a view of this situation and a view of specifically of any crime language in 93962 as ambiguous. And we believe it should be seen as ambiguous because of the Ray decision, a specific penalty enhancer and a general enhancer. Well, do they both apply? We think it's inherent that it's ambiguous whether both apply. In conjunction with that, or in combination with that, you have the exclusion of the drunk driving offenses as being considered past offenses. The legislature is clearly making some statement about drunk driving offenses by doing that. We've argued that while they're very severe offenses, they are a separate regime of offenses that are dealt with specifically under their own specific enhancement statutes, 346-65.
So doesn't the state, and didn't also the Court of Appeals take the position that Ray was distinguishable? And it was distinguishable because in Ray, the state was attempting to use one prior conviction to trigger two enhancers, whereas here you've got separate convictions. You've got a conviction for an attempt to deliver or possession with intent to deliver THC, and you've got a third offense in regard to OWI. So don't you have a real distinction between Ray in this case?
That's true. Yes, you absolutely do. Mr. Delaney has an additional offense in his past, and there are separate offenses being used under each statute. That's true. As we've looked at the case law and the Ray decision, the holding that I've tried to find in Ray, or that I've found is implied in Ray, I think still can be applied here, in that the ambiguity that the Ray court needed to find ambiguity in the statutes, and they did. They didn't elaborate on it terribly, but they did find that ambiguity. I think that holding, that implicit holding, applies here. I don't think the Ray decision necessarily leads to a positive result for me. However, I think, and the state conceded in Ray, that one offense should not be used under both provisions. But I think that still leaves open the question as to whether the specific enhancer should be applied to Delaney. It's distinguishable in the sense that there's a different level of culpability, perhaps, or I don't know if it's more severe or less, it's just different. Mr. Delaney has the additional past non-drunk driving offense that would seem to entitle him to be enhanced under 93962. Ray doesn't get me where I need to go on substance, but on the ambiguity in comparing the statutes, I think it does. I think it says when we have a specific and a general criminal penal statute, we need to look at them and if there is sort of an overlap in the scope of the type of offenses they cover, I think there's a question raised as to whether the legislature meant to apply both of them.
I'd like to see how these definitions fit in this statute. There's a definition of felony and misdemeanor, and felony doesn't mean motor vehicle offenses. That's what 2-3 says, right?
Right.
Okay, so where is the word felony used? I'm looking at 93962.
Yeah, right in the beginning of subsection 3.
Pardon me?
In the beginning of subsection 3 of 93962, in this section, felony and misdemeanor have the following...
No, where... That's a definition.
Okay.
So where is the term felony and misdemeanor used? We're dealing here with a felony?
The past offense is a felony, and the current one, I think, is still a misdemeanor offense.
With a 1 year imprisonment?
The maximum of 1 year. I think so.
Well, it says misdemeanor. Means a crime which doesn't carry a prescribed maximum penalty sufficient to constitute a felony. Felony is what is a prescribed maximum penalty for 1 year or more.
Right. So I guess this would be then technically a felony because he gave him a full year.
So what's technical about it?
It's a felony.
Okay. So now I'm looking at the first 939.62 because I want to see where I'm going to put in these definitions.
Mm-hmm.
And where is felony used?
Well, under subsection 2, it's used to describe...
Okay, well, it's also used in C. All right. Now, if the actor is a repeater, I'm looking at 2.
Yes.
If the actor was convicted of a felony during the 5-year period immediately preceding the commission of the crime... That's where we fall in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because he has felonies, and that's because they're more than 1 year. Okay.
Right. Well, yeah, and this specifically is a felony. It's the intent to deliver THC, so that's clearly under that provision.
All right. Then it says it is immaterial that the sentence was stayed, withheld, or suspended. That means this prior act, right? The prior conviction.
Okay. Correct.
All right. So that's where the term felony comes in, and the word crime is also used in that sentence. Convicted of a felony, meaning preceding the commission of the crime. Okay. Now, in your particular case, the man is convicted convicted of several felonies and then convicted of OWI, a motor vehicle charge.
Well, it's, and, I think just the one felony.
Pardon me?
I just think the one felony at issue here.
Okay. One felony. So he is a repeater, right?
Right.
All right.
Well, he would be a repeater under 930 and 62. That's right.
Okay. Suppose he was first convicted of third offense OWI, felony, right?
Right.
And then is convicted of theft.
Correct, yes.
Is he a repeater?
No.
No.
I don't think he is.
Why not?
Because subsection, 939.62 and subsection 3.
3A.
Yeah, doesn't allow you to consider those types of offenses, the three past OWI offenses, as felonies or misdemeanors.
That's right. So, so the sentence here depends on the order in which he commits the crime.
Yes.
Under this statute.
Yes, I tried to point that out. It's,
I know you did.
Yeah.
And your position, if I understood your brief, was, does it make much sense that if he's convicted of one crime first and another crime second, the penalty is different than if the two crimes were reversed?
That's correct. Yeah, we think that is, it highlights the separate nature of the drunk driving penalty in the answer statute.
Maybe the legislature thought that if you're convicted of OWI after a felony, that that's a higher offense than the reverse. I mean, the legislature has great power in determining sentencing, right?
Yes.
But it can't be totally off the wall.
Right.
Right?
Right.
It's called due process.
Correct.
Right. So what's your position, that it's totally off the wall?
No, I think that it went just decided the other way. When it initially enacted the criminal code and the general penalty enhancer, in fact, the language of the statute back in 1949-51 explicitly excludes motor vehicle offenses from the entirety of the statute. Then it got refigured, and in 1953, the subsections were added and the definitions were changed. I think the larger point is what we are facing here. What did the legislature mean? Either way, there is something of an anomaly. The one you've pointed out, I think, is absolutely right.
Do you have any authority for the fact that an irrational sentence structure is a violation of due process and we can overturn it? I mean, it's easier under your statutory interpretation. I agree with that.
Yeah, that's how I've approached it. I haven't approached it as a constitutional argument. Just the statutes, the legislature decided way back that those types of offenses would be separate. In my research, although not cited, I do recall some cases addressing the equal protection due process issue. And I thought that the court had decided that there wasn't that problem with this kind of application that you've described, that I've described, so that it could be allowable under a constitutional equal protection type of argument. But I think the statutes, even now, in their reconfigured form, want to exclude penalties for drunk driving offenses from the general enhancement statute and put them in the very specific provisions in 346.65. That provision's been changed many, many times. The legislature's, I think, taken pains to apply very specific and necessary penalties to these types of offenses under that provision. So our point is that they're different, and they should be kept different, kept separate.
As I read the statute, subsection 3, which you're relying on, relates to the definitions of felony and misdemeanor for purposes of the predicate offenses, not...
Sorry, I cannot hear you, Justice Sykes.
Okay. To get back to the statutory interpretation argument, because I did not understand you to be making a due process or constitutional argument in this case.
That's right.
And the statutory interpretation argument depends upon the theory that the definitions in subsection 3 apply to the present offense, not just the predicate offenses.
I would say it's an implicit definition. Subsection 3 defines felony to misdemeanor for the entirety of the section And we're saying that that's essentially saying what crimes are. Crimes that are later defined as not including motor vehicle offenses.
Except the terms felony and misdemeanor are not used in the statute to describe the present offense, only the predicate offenses.
That's correct. I still think that implicit, though, crimes is defined by subsection 3.
So you're not making a due process argument, as I attempted to put into your mouth. You're making an argument that there's an anomaly in the statutes if we interpret it the way the state does.
That's,
and that the legislature couldn't have intended that anomaly.
That's what I've
that's argued. That's your argument.
It is. I mean, that is what I've argued. I have not made the constitutional argument. I've said that looking at it today, as I first did, it seemed clear that something was being said to me by excluding these types of offenses from being predicates. And I thought, well, this probably means they don't expect it to be enhanced at all under this provision. It's you know, it's over in 346. It's not in 939 or 961 or any of those. And then as you look at it, you say, oh, well, if we do a sort of a very close reading of this language, we can sweep in these types of offenses. We can use them. Even though we couldn't consider this offense as a predicate, we can enhance it. I said, well, that's not what the legislature intended. Further investigation and research reveals that way back when it was first passed, the language was clear that these types of provisions were not supposed to be enhanced. So that raises an issue, and the state's pointed it out, that what is why should Delaney get off in this situation and someone who's only committed three OWI offenses and doesn't have the past felony? I mean, they somehow are, you know, not punished, and so is Delaney. So somehow we're not punishing him enough. That anomaly is raised by my position, and I think that's what the legislature intended by the language and by the separation of those provisions.
Counsel, as I understand a portion of your argument, it centers on the definition of 939-62, the words any crime for which imprisonment may be imposed, focusing on the word crime. And as I understand it, your argument is, well, you know, are there any other types of crimes other than felonies and misdemeanors? It has to be, crime has to be felony or misdemeanor. Then you go to sub 3, where felony and misdemeanor have the following meanings in cases of crimes, which buttresses your argument. So your position, as I understood reading your brief, is that, look, at least that term is ambiguous, what is meant by crimes. And then once you get ambiguity, that then you get into the intent, and you look to the law review article in both your brief and your reply brief, your brief in chief, you look to the law review article of Plautz, who was one of the drafters of the 4950 revision. You look to the minutes of the council in 52, and you have the legislative history in the back of your appendix, which you indicate stands for the proposition that initially fish and game and motor vehicles were not to be included. And then in 52, they changed that, just not motor vehicles included. Now, is that the way, is that correct? And do I have an understanding? Because of some of the other things you were talking about, I didn't see it as the focus of your argument. Maybe I'm missing it.
No, I think that I'm out of time.
You may answer the question.
Okay. Yes, that's the statutory language argument that I've made. I think
then you have the case law argument in terms of you
right.
Can't have. So those are your two main arguments.
Those are the two main arguments. I think if my reading of the statute is not reasonable, the language, and it's clear to you, well, I think still, even though it's clear, the case law, Ray in particular, and other cases, the Sweat case, there's some dispute about that case, but that I think the overlay of the two, the specific and the general, even if you don't buy my language argument, says they're ambiguous. Now we can look at what they mean. And when we do, I think we see that the legislature meant to just exclude these and make them separate and not allow them to be doubly enhanced.
Thank you. Mr. Silcata.
Has the 5 minutes
You have
been
5 minutes in rebuttal. I'm sorry. David Becker, Assistant Attorney General of the State of Wisconsin. Thank you.
May it please the court, I am Assistant Attorney General David Becker. I appear here this morning on behalf of the plaintiff respondent. There are obviously two issues before the court. The first one is whether or not the general habitual criminality sentence enhancement provision that we find in 93962 applies at all to any to the commission of any traffic offenses, regardless of whether they happen to be a traffic offense that is simply punished on its own terms, or whether it's punished as this traffic offense is punished by ever-increasing penalties depending on whether he has one or two or more prior offenses. And then there is a separate and distinct issue that's raised here, and that is whether or not it is permissible to apply two penalty enhancers to the same conviction, which then it only comes into play with respect to offenses such as the ones we have here, where you increase the penalty for a crime by virtue of its having been committed before. I think the focus of the argument has been primarily, this morning, has been primarily on the first issue, and I guess that's where I will start. I think with regard to the second issue, the primary authority on the other side is the Ray case, and I think that case is plainly distinguishable on the grounds that were indicated by one of the members of the court, namely that in Ray we had simply a single prior conviction that was being used twice to support two penalty enhancers, whereas here we have separate and distinct prior convictions which individually trigger each of the two penalty enhancers we're attempting to apply. So that's basically our response with regard to that second issue, and I will, unless there are other questions on that second issue, I'll focus this morning on
has a maximum penalty been imposed in this case on DeHarris?
I don't know the answer to that. All I know is that we have never argued that Harris should be invoked by this court. It was not argued in the district attorney's brief in the Court of Appeals, and as should be plain from the fact that we joined in and supported, or I don't know if we joined in, if that's technically correct, but we certainly did not oppose and we affirmatively supported the petition for this court's review because we feel it's absolutely critical that we get a definitive precedential decision on this issue because it continues to arise. And we need a
I think we should ignore that issue.
That's the state's
position.
An
advisory opinion.
Well, I don't know that it would be an advisory opinion. Chalk it up to the state waived any claim that that review was barred by Harris approach.
What's the rule of Harris that if a sentence is imposed, the sentencing court cannot use the extra time that the enhancer provides unless it uses up all of the time for the present offense, right?
Right, and that any question regarding the appropriateness of the penalty enhancer does not come into play until the penalty enhancer is actually used.
Right, so as applied in this case, the judge could not have sentenced the defendant to 6 months on the 1 year underlying offense plus 2 years out of the 3 year enhancer. That would be an improper sentence under Harris.
That would trigger the issue here as to whether or not it was improper.
Right. Yes. But we have no imposed sentence in this case. We have a withheld sentence. So
right.
Harris is off the table.
Unless you interpret Harris to mean, unless you impose the maximum, you can't get to the repeater. But I suppose that's not before us today.
Well, that's our position. That we have not argued that it hasn't been briefed, and we are anxious to get a definitive ruling on this subject, and we waive any contention that this issue isn't properly before the court under
Harris. The question is whether the defendant waives it.
Well, certainly ask him, but I see him shaking his head yes, and he certainly does because he...
He said no from this place, but shaking heads don't show on the record.
Okay. If he doesn't waive it, then this court is going to dispose of this case on the basis that there hasn't... You're going to affirm the Court of Appeals, I believe, because you're going to say the issue isn't properly before you. So you won't consider any of his arguments.
Well, could it be before us, should we ask for additional briefing here? I mean, when you read Harris, you know, and you say when the maximum, this section we're talking about 939, only applies when the penalty enhancement only when the maximum underlying sentence is imposed. Period. So you say, well, we didn't brief it, and therefore we don't think that it should be used in this case.
That's the state's position.
Okay, and if I could just clarify, and I don't mean to belabor this, what the counts are that are implicated here and what the defendant's sentence was. He pleaded no contest to counts 1, 3, and 5. Count 1 is the one that's at issue here, which pertains to OWI 3rd as a repeat offender. Count 3 was causing injury by OWI. And count 5 was another count of causing injury by OWI. And he got 3 years imposed on count 5 and probation sentences on the other two. Correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Now, if you give somebody probation for the maximum number of years, is that a maximum sentence, in your opinion? When you can get 20 years, let's say. Is this all before truth and sentencing?
Yeah, it certainly is all before truth and sentencing.
If you get 20 in the gut and he gets probation, is that a maximum sentence, in your opinion? Oh, maybe you don't want to answer that. That's the problem.
Yeah, I don't know. See, I don't know.
Yeah, that's the problem. I don't know either, but that's the issue. Okay.
That would be, that's the issue that we don't think is before the court.
That's right. Yeah. That hasn't been briefed before the court.
Right.
Okay, let's go into the statutory interpretation.
Right. Our argument is fairly simple and straightforward, and I think the court understands it by virtue of the questions that it posed here. And that is this, that when you read through the habitual criminality statute, 939-62, and you come to this definition in sub 3 that excludes motor vehicle offenses under chapters 341 to 349 from the definition of felony and misdemeanor, that provision only relates, that definition only relates to sub 2 of the statute, where the definition of repeater is provided and talks in terms of the actor being a repeater if the actor was convicted of a felony, et cetera, or three separate misdemeanors, et cetera, et cetera, and that it does not come into play in sub 1 of the statute, where one is defining or describing, or where the statute is describing, the present crime that has been committed that we're now attempting to enhance, where the words misdemeanor and felony are not at all used, but rather the statute provides that if the actor is a repeater, as defined in sub 2, where felony and misdemeanor are used, and the present conviction is for any crime for which imprisonment may be imposed except for an escape under 946.642 or a failure to report under 946.425, the maximum term of imprisonment prescribed by law may be increased as follows. It's our contention that when they said any crime for which imprisonment may be imposed, they meant any crime. And insofar as the definition of crime there is concerned, we simply look to the definition of crime in 939.12, where crime is defined, and it is not defined in terms of a crime as any misdemeanor or felony. Rather, it's defined in terms of a crime as conduct which is prohibited by state law and punishable by fine or imprisonment or both. And that's the definition that is to be used there.
Why not the definition in 939.60, which indicates that every crime is either a misdemeanor or a felony?
Well, why not? that definition because I don't know how you put that. Well, because it's not defining crime, it's defining felony and misdemeanor. It is the specific definition of crime under Wisconsin statutes is 939.12. A crime is conduct which is prohibited by state law and punishable by fine or imprisonment or both. If that definition, if that definition were a crime is any felony or misdemeanor, I still don't know whether I would buy into his argument, but at least would have some plausibility there because.
What crime is not a felony or misdemeanor?
There are none.
So a crime, by definition in this state, whether you look to 93960 or elsewhere, a crime, by definition, means either a felony or a misdemeanor. Is that
well,
correct?
I don't think it's by definition. I think that's the fact of the matter, but I don't think that's the definition. The definition of crime is conduct which is prohibited by state law and punishable by fine or imprisonment or both.
Let me try a different approach.
Sure.
In listening to your argument, as always, I find your definitional argument reasonable and articulate and a lot of other positive things. That isn't the issue in this case, as I see it. The issue isn't whether or not your definition is reasonable and makes sense and is very articulate. The issue is whether or not the term any crime can have other reasonable interpretations, whether or not it is ambiguous. So that's what I want to focus on. What does the word crime mean? And when I ask you the question, what crime is not a felony or a misdemeanor, and of course you say none, that all crimes are either felony or misdemeanor, I say to you, why isn't it reasonable to then define crime as any felony or misdemeanor, since that not only is what you said is the practical definition, but also the definition that you can find in 93960, even without getting to the 93962 sub 3. Forget that 939 for right now in terms of how are we defining crime. All crimes have to be either felonies or misdemeanors.
But that's not the definition of crime. That's a fact, but that's not the
that's
definition.
That's the practical effect, you're saying.
The practical effect, but it's not the definition. The legislature has defined crime in sub 12. It's not defining crime in sub 12 of 939.
So, in other words, you're saying...
939.12.
I recently was, believe it or not, at an Algebra 2 class, and it's been a while since I've been in an Algebra 2 class. But you're saying if a crime... You want to define crime, and I'm going to say a crime equals, in Wisconsin, felony and misdemeanor. Okay? Crime equals felony and misdemeanor. That's what I am suggesting. And you're saying, no, but the converse, you're saying, felony and misdemeanor equal crime. And I'm saying they're interchangeable, and you're saying they're not interchangeable.
I don't think they're interchangeable in a statutory schema. That's what I'm saying.
I'm looking for the definition.
Yeah, well...
You're advocating that misdemeanor and felony equals crime, but crime, for definition, does not equal misdemeanor and felony. And that...
Well, it does as a practical matter, but I want you to look at the statutes and how the legislature has defined the terms.
Okay. How has the legislature defined the word crime? It has not defined crime in 939.62, right?
No, it has not defined it in 939.62. Okay. It has defined it in 939.12. A crime is conduct which is prohibited by state law and punishable by fine or imprisonment or both.
Okay, and then...
And that's the definition that is to be used here because...
Okay, that means if it's by a fine or imprisonment or both. It is either a misdemeanor or a felony.
Right.
Right? That's what it says in 93912. And then it goes on to say conduct punishable by a forfeiture is not a crime. We know that, right?
Right.
Okay. So let's substitute 93912. It is in this statute. It means either it's a felony or misdemeanor.
No, because you interjected into 93912 something that's not there. You said it defines crime as felony or misdemeanor. It doesn't define crime as felony or misdemeanor. Right. It defines crime as conduct which is prohibited by state law. Those happen to be felonies or misdemeanors, but that's not...
I accept that. Yeah. Let's just accept that. Where does it get us?
Well, I think where it gets...
Justice Bradley, I'm going to accept that. Where does it get us?
Well, where it gets us is that crime includes motor vehicle offenses under chapters 341 to 346. And if there's some doubt, and there obviously is in some of the justices' minds about this, let me suggest that let's not just focus on the word any or the word crime, and let's take that whole phrase, for any crime for which imprisonment may be imposed, except for an escape under 946.42 or a failure to report under 946.425. The legislature has clearly indicated here that when it wants to describe offenses that shouldn't be considered crimes for purposes of enhancement, for penalty enhancement, it has put in an exception clause right here, and it has laid out the crimes that should not be considered to be subject to potential enhancement because the person is a repeater, namely escape, 946.42, or failure to report, 946.425. If the legislature had also intended to exclude offenses under the Motor Vehicle Code, that's where they would have put it. You are attributing to the legislature, I think you're almost, it's almost an insult to the legislature to suggest that they knew how to describe what crimes they wanted to accept from the definition from those crimes for which to which this penalty enhancement provision could be applied. They knew how to do that, put in an exception clause right there, and then expected us through this convoluted logic of going to a definition of felony misdemeanor, which is not the language used there, and then say we're going to create an algebraic equation that says all felonies all felonies and misdemeanors equal crimes, or all crimes are either felonies or misdemeanors, and we're going to apply that algebraic equation, and now we're going to put that algebraic equation in here, and then we're going to go back to sub 3, and we're going to decide what is all included within felonies and misdemeanors. I think that's attributing to the legislature. I'm not sure what's attributing to the legislature. I think it's attributing to a thought process that couldn't possibly
have. Let's take a look at legislative intent, then.
Sure.
That's what where you want to go. Under your interpretation, it is the intent.
Sure.
That if someone operates a commercial motor vehicle, first offense, operates without a commercial motor vehicle license, first offense, for which there's a bail bond of $200, that can subject them to 3 years imprisonment under your interpretation. That's what the legislature intended.
You're going to have to tell me about this crime, something that I don't know off the top of my head, and that is what, yes, I know what the bail, you've described the bail bond, what's the penalty for it after he's convicted?
$200 to $600 and or 0 to 6 months.
Okay, so it's a crime?
Yes.
The answer to your question is yes.
Thank you. I'm reading under what's entitled in our bail bond, misdemeanor traffic crimes.
Right.
And okay, and just, so
if he's got a felony in his past,
that's
and
right.
He now goes out and commits a crime.
First offense.
Crime.
First offense, operating without a commercial motor vehicle license. It's your position the legislature intended that the exposure, if he has a prior felony or she has a prior felony, for this offense be 3 years.
just as the exposure for any offense, any criminal offense, in or outside the traffic code that may have a relatively modest penalty imposed, as long as imprisonment is a possibility, the legislature definitely intended that crime can be, the punishment for that crime can be enhanced under this provision by virtue of the fact that this is a convicted felon who did not learn his lesson from his conviction for his felony and now went out and committed another crime, other than escape or failure to report, which is exempted.
Mr. Becker, are there any crimes that are motor vehicle offenses that are more serious than OWI and the offense just referred to by Justice Bradley?
Well, and obviously OWI itself is graduated into ever more serious penalties, and I guess I don't know off the top of my head without going through all the penalty provisions of 346.65.
So suppose a driver was drunk and ran over and killed three or four of the students here in the chamber. Is that covered by the motor vehicle code?
That's actually a motor vehicle offense that's in the criminal code, I believe. Homicide by
intoxicated
use. Thank you. Intoxicated use of a vehicle is in the criminal code in chapter 940, and therefore there'd be no argument even by my opponent that would be covered, because that's not even exempted from the definition of felony misdemeanor.
Well, suppose someone was an automobile dealer or dealing in cars and was fraudulently changing the odometer or passing along stolen vehicles. Would that be covered by the motor vehicle code?
Honestly, I don't know. I don't believe it's anywhere in the criminal code. I assume that's where it is, somewhere in 341, insofar as it's proscribed and it is made criminal and there is imprisonment imposed for it. I assume it would be somewhere in 341 to 346.
Counsel, one of the problems, and this is a generic thing I need assistance with in terms of the mindset. As a trial court judge for 10 years in Marathon County, and some of our DAs were pretty aggressive in terms of their charging and prosecution, I never saw applied to criminal traffic cases, OWI cases, let's say, like we have here, and 93962 enhancement. It never happened. Somewhere in these briefs, I read, perhaps in a footnote, is this the Kenosha County case, and it was the first time that it was ever done in Kenosha County?
Well, I don't think it could be the first time since I know I've had another case out of Kenosha County.
Okay. All I know is what I'm reading in my experience. So if this definition were all so clear, now maybe the response is people have been doing it everywhere for years and I just don't know about it. But from my mindset, I've never seen it in the 10 years that I was on the bench. If this definition were all so clear, why haven't they been for years? Why haven't the Mother Against Drunk Drivers been saying to you trial court judges around the state when it's second offense or OWI, throw the book on them? I mean, I just haven't seen that interpretation before we come here today. And so I guess I ask you if it's your understanding that this has been widely used.
I don't know one way or the other. I sit in the ivory tower across the street, and I don't get down into the trial court where I know what, as a practical matter, is happening. So I don't know whether it's your experience, obviously, was it in Marathon County. Apparently it wasn't. Maybe, part of the explanation could simply be that drunk drivers are not generally people that have criminal records, and so there was no occasion to use this. I mean, that I think would explain, you know,
I don't know if that's
most of the cases.
Consistent with my experience,
who
knows.
But otherwise, I don't know because I do not have the experience to draw on. I know, as I said, that I've had another case out of Kenosha County. I know that yesterday when I mentioned that I was going in for this argument and what the issue was, some other attorney in the unit said, oh, I had that same issue on a case. And but I didn't press him on what county it came out of or that kind of thing. But it's clear that it's being done.
What is the rational justification for treating differently the order in which OWI is a conviction for that? What's the rational justification?
Well, I think it's certainly rational to assuming the fundamental premise that we agree that the legislature had. And that, in fact, is not being argued against. In fact, is part of the underpinning of my opponent's argument, and that is that for purposes of defining who is a repeater in terms of the predicate offenses that will make one a repeater, assuming that the legislature has rationally decided we do not want to consider people who have committed offenses under the Motor Vehicle Code chapters 941 to 946, we do not want to consider them the kind of criminal to which we want to now subject an increased penalty when they now commit another crime. Assuming that as rational.
Well, it may or may not be rational, but that's. Well,
but we know that the legislature did that. We know that the legislature, and I gather your rationality argument is leading to a conclusion that because it's not rational, we're not going to impute that intent to do that to the legislature. So we know the legislature decided that prior criminal motor vehicle offenses should not make the person a repeater. They cannot be the predicate offenses. Once you agree that the legislature did that, then it seems to me it's perfectly rational for the legislature to say, when we do have a person that we have decided is a repeater because he has committed a felony in the past or he has committed the three misdemeanors in the past within the preceding 5 years, as the statute requires to make one a repeater, that at that point, we don't care anymore the nature of the crime. At that point, you are a convicted felon or a convicted three-time misdemeanant, and you have shown us that you have learned nothing by that conviction because you have now gone out and committed another crime. And we don't care anymore whether that crime is under the Motor Vehicle Code or not. You have shown that you haven't learned your lesson, and therefore we want to impose the enhanced penalties on you. And I don't think there's anything irrational about that. I think it's analogous to what we all would agree, the way we would all agree the statute works, and that is with regard to the person who has committed a prior misdemeanor. If the person committed one prior misdemeanor, and then committed a felony, he would not be subject to enhanced penalties because he wouldn't be a repeater because he only had one prior misdemeanor. Now, however, if he has committed a prior felony and now he commits just one single misdemeanor, everybody would agree, except for the argument here about the Motor Vehicle Code, but getting outside of the Motor Vehicle Code, everyone would agree that this statute, this 939-62, would apply to allow an enhancement for that misdemeanor offense. So he would not have been a repeater by virtue of having just committed one misdemeanor offense, but having committed one misdemeanor offense after having been a repeater, we're going to increase his punishment. And I think it's very analogous to what we've got here. We may not consider him; these may not be predicate offenses that make him a repeater, but once he's a repeater and he commits them, by golly, he hasn't learned his lesson, and we're going to enhance his punishment. So
somehow, from your brief, I got the idea you found that troubling.
Well, you know what? I didn't mean to send that message. I thought I was quoting him. I will admit, when I read my brief over in preparation for our argument, I seemed to it looked like I conceded it and then simply went on, but so what? That's what the legislature intended, and they can create troubling results if they want.
Right.
And that's, of course, another answer to this, but if you're asking me whether I find it troubling, no, for the reason that I just indicated.
You did find anomalies. If you find an anomaly, you think that that's something the legislature should not have intended.
No, I don't, but I don't, no, I don't agree with that premise. The legislature may have...
You said that on page 5. You said if it's an anomaly, that's not what the legis... That was on another issue.
Yeah, that was on another issue, that there wasn't... yeah, I suppose you can make that argument, but like I said, I don't consider it a...
Strongly.
I don't consider it an anomaly, and my point only, my point being, my point when I was indicating the troubling result, that these troubling results, I'm not concerned, is because the legislature can create troubling results, that was based on my view that all of this language is unambiguous, which obviously some justices don't agree with. But if it's unambiguous, then the creation of anomalies, I don't think, make any difference, because the legislature is allowed to create anomalies. They do it all the time. The anomaly and the potential anomaly would only come into play when you, first of all, as a threshold matter, find the statute ambiguous, and then you're looking for ways to resolve the ambiguity. And if you've got a choice between a non-anomalous and an anomalous result or interpretation, you're going to choose the latter rather than the former.
We all know that for the plain meaning canon of construction, there are contrary instructions. And I went through the legislative history here. Yeah. And on the basis of the legislative history, when you look at this, the structure of the statute has changed. And they eliminated, they used to put fish and game laws along with motor vehicle laws as exceptions. But when you track back the history and you read Mr. Platts, and you, I think, did you know Mr. Platts?
I sure did.
Right. And Mr. Platts was Mr. Criminal Law in this state, drafted most of the criminal laws that you and I are familiar with and that are still on the books, and including the 1955 Criminal Code, which is what we're dealing with some amendments. But when you go back and you put Bill Platts's comments in connection with the legislative words, the statutory words, that was used in 1949 and following, his words are not as ambiguous as your brief would lead us to believe. I think that you can say, on the basis of the statutory the structure of the statute with the amendments, that the intent was always to just exclude motor vehicle from everything. And then my other point is, I find the how they define felony and misdemeanor in 3 a little strange. It's not the usual the way we do definitions in a statute.
It's really an exclusion, not a definition. My red light is on.
You may answer.
As a preface to my answer, I'd like to say this. I responded to the Platts Law Review article in my brief, and I think his statement just rested out of... Well, his statement, it's one sentence, and I don't know that without some context, we can definitely say what he intended by that. But what I didn't do... What I didn't do, because my opponent had not cited it before, is I did not respond to the question of how should the old predecessor statute have been interpreted, and would its interpretation support my opponent's position, or is its interpretation consistent with the interpretation of the present statute that we are propounding here this morning? And I would certainly appreciate it if this court is going to go to that legislative history, and if this court is going to go look at former 359.12, which is the former repeater statute, and is going to say that under that statute, my opponent would be right, the present statute is simply a repetition of the previous statute, and therefore my opponent wins. If you're going to look at that legislative history, I would appreciate the opportunity to make a written response. I'm already on my red light. Even under the best of conditions, I'm not sure I articulate as well as I would like my argument when I orally present it. I speak much too fast. I'm not sure there are any periods in what I say. I would like the opportunity to lay out on paper what our position is regarding the interpretation of the statute. I will say in short, in response to your answer, that our position is that the provision in that former statute that says that motor vehicle offenses under, and the printing is a little light here, I'm looking at the appendix to my opponent's reply brief. Motor vehicle offenses under chapter, I think it's 85, fish and game laws, offenses in violation of chapters 23 and 29, or offenses against equivalent laws of other states, are not to be considered crimes for purposes of this section. Our bottom line is, for purposes of this section means, for purposes of the section in which that sentence appears, which is section 1B of that statute, and in 1B, they are simply, again, defining felony and misdemeanor for purposes of describing predicate offenses, because otherwise the statute is the same. It talks about a person being a repeater if he is convicted of a crime punishable by imprisonment, except escapes, and then who has, within 5 years previously, committed a felony.
1B section or subsection?
Well, all right, I should be saying subsection. And this court's, we didn't have this to respond to, I wasn't able to cite it, but this court's case law clearly indicates that the word section does not necessarily mean the entire, bold-faced 359.12. It can mean subsections and sub-subsections of the statute.
You interpreted my question. You expected the question. You interpreted it properly. And thank you for your response.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Becker. Mr. Sincotta, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you. Justice Bradley, I wanted to pick up on something you had described with your concern about the definition and the confusion. And my opponent asserted that the legislature would not have meant to put into the statute the definition I've suggested, which is that crime is defined within this provision, 939.62, and it excludes OWI offenses. As I looked at the old statutory language, and in conjunction with that, my opponent points out that escape and failure to report are explicitly excluded. Therefore, if we wanted to exclude OWI offenses, we would have done so explicitly. Well, actually, here's our view of it, and here's what I think the historic language is consistent with. Back in the day, escapes were excluded from a repeater. So in other words, you couldn't be a repeater. To be a repeater, you had to commit offenses, but not escapes. All right, that was in 1951. Also in 51, motor vehicle laws are exempted completely from the section. Now, there's commentary and a markup by Mr. Platts. The changes are not doing anything except accelerating, and they're pulling the fish and game laws out of the exclusion. Now, repeater gets the OWI exclusion, and the escape preclusion is put into the broader determination of a crime, it seems to me. And the point being is, I think that when they refigured this thing, a few of these anomalies sort of were planted there to come up now. I mean, the repeater, and I don't know why a repeater should not be, a person that's escaped multiple times should not be a repeater, but that's what it seemed to say under 359.12 in 1951. Then they switched it around, and repeater then was defined and excluded OWI offenses, whereas prior, those were excluded from the entirety of the section. My point being that this refiguring of the language, I think it's important that, obviously, the court hewed as strictly to the language that the legislature's passed. And yet, when you have a refiguring of this sort, these things can arise. And so I believe that the plain language argument that I've made is consistent with the intent of the legislature as revealed by the historic language. I think that that's buttressed by the fact that under no circumstances is there any argument that motor vehicle laws should be included as being past offenses or predicate offenses. The legislature is also saying something there, that these offenses are different in some way, different in kind, perhaps not in severity, although this court in the Weideman decision did recognize that 346-65 penalties are, and the underlying offenses are in some ways different than the rest of offenses in the criminal code, justified at a lower standard of burden of proof to convict on those offenses. So I believe the intent is clear under the statutory language. In addition, you have Mr. Platt's law review article and his comments. It also seems to make sense to me, given the exclusion. Importantly, I believe you can get to a review of that intent without doing any injury to the principle, important principle, of interpreting the statute strictly and plainly. I think that it's a confusing statute, given the exclusion in sub 3. Secondarily, there's the implicit rule of the court in Ray, the Court of Appeals, that says when you have a specific, and also the idea that if you have a specific criminal provision, it should apply over the general. Now, you're not supposed to get to that rule until it's ambiguous, but I believe with that in the background and the Ray holding, the application 93962 in this instance is ambiguous.
For clarification purposes, you're not arguing a Harris violation here because on the count in question, no sentence has been imposed, it's been withheld, he's been placed on probation.
Right. I wouldn't be, and I looked at that, and I maybe I looked at it just now and thought about it. I think Judge Wilk meant to apply the maximum punishment he could, and therefore I think honestly that's why I'm here, because that's what I felt was applied, and I felt it was legitimate to continue the argument at the Court of Appeals that was started by the trial counsel, that he did apply a maximum punishment, therefore, and that allowed him to enhance, and therefore the issue is raised.
But your client got the increased amount of probation that's available by virtue of the application of the enhancer.
That's right.
Otherwise, he would have been limited to 2 years.
That's right.
Thank you, Mr. Simpata. Thank you, Mr. Becker, for your argument today in 01-1051-CR, State v. Delaney. The court will take a moment's recess. So.